It wasn't planned this way. Raphael picked the opening hymn on his own, and he asked me what I had preferences for, and I said, I have no preference, just pick something. And he picked Now Thank We All Our God. And it's a beautifully picked hymn for the historical reasons that I was thinking about preaching on, because Canada is not as old or as young as we often get in our little historical books that I got when I was in high school and in university, giving me the history of Canada. Let's just say that the history of Canada that I received in my high school and university education, early university education, was thoroughly off the mark. Thoroughly off the mark. Because today, even, we're celebrating Canada Day on July 1st. As if the day when Confederation happened is the beginning of this Canadian people, which is just nuts. 1867 is the day in which Canada became a confederated nation. But the Diocese of Quebec started in 1674. It gives you a glimpse as to how much earlier people have been living and organizing on this land. But why did they come here? Well, there's a whole number of different reasons, but a great deal of it has to do with what was the first hymn. The war, the corruption, and everything brutal about the dying European civilization. Chesterton pointed out that the imperialism of Western Europe was not a sign of its strength, but of its weakness. The fact that it no longer had the internal vitality for self-renewal, so it had to go to foreign lands and steal what they had as a type of, I don't know, civilizational life support. So rather than actually renewing themselves with the gospel, renewing themselves with the truth, renewing themselves with virtue, Europe gradually declined. And what happens with today's opening hymn is it was sung by Germanic peoples after the famous and terrifying 30 Years' War. Now, I don't know, I never knew anything about this war at all from my public education. What happened was you had the Holy Roman Empire, which was neither holy nor Roman, but it was basically Germany of the Middle Ages for several centuries. Started roughly around the time of Charlemagne. It was a large, eventually became a confederacy of princedoms that were all bound together by a feeling of a common religious and cultural identity. But they wanted to maintain their cultural differences as well. They wanted to maintain the fact that Bavarians were Bavarians and all the other different types of Germans were all independent, but yet they saw themselves as having a common destiny, Christendom. Then the Reformation happened. And that unity, and then when that went, they also went, and they started killing each other. Until World War I, it was the most brutal war the world had ever seen. Because brothers and sisters turned out to be enemies. And it wasn't fought on religious lines at all, really. You would have French kings supporting Protestant monarchs in other areas with money, and then even Catholic bishops like Richelieu supporting people, Protestants in Germany, to kill fellow Catholics because he wanted a divided Germany. So gradually what you saw was that Europe was more preoccupied with power than with faith. And so a great many people, sick and tired of this whole thing, they said, that's it. They found this new plot of land over there. We're going to start fresh. So Canada is not really a new country. It's in fact a branch of Europe that had been grafted onto new soil. And like I said, the Diocese of Quebec started in 1674, roughly with François de Laval, Saint François de Laval. It was funny because Pope Francis just decreed he was a saint. This guy didn't go through the standard process of, you know, getting the miracle, etc. Right around the time of the last Quebec election, the Pope just sent out a letter to all of Canada saying, by the way, your guy's a saint now. And we're like, oh, we don't even get that whole picture unveiling ceremony or nothing. He also canonized by decree Blessed Saint Maria of the Incarnation, two hugely important saints for the development of what would later be the Canadian experiment. François de Laval helped establish schools, hospitals, care, all of these things, and established a precedent in Quebec, which is that the faith is what binds these people for a common destiny. So long before there's a government, long before there's any kind of institutional authority that really has an impact on each other's lives, the church was there. And it wasn't just a bunch of men doing this. Saint Marie of the Incarnation, she comes to Canada, she wants to teach the First Peoples, she wants to teach young women as to how to in fact have an education. And when challenged by the authorities that eventually came in after her and said, "How dare you teach women chemistry?" And she's like, "Oh, but they have to know chemistry for baking." It was a great joke. Eventually, she's like, "This is what nitrogen does and all this other stuff." And it's like, "For baking? Yeah, sure." But she knew that giving women an education was an important principle. And that even if the gradual developings of a civil society said it wasn't right, she didn't care. She knew what God wanted. And she wasn't even the image of the later English or French colonialists that would walk in and subvert the cultures of the local First Peoples for her own imperialistic ends. No, she didn't force them to learn her language. She forced herself to learn theirs. Languages that had never had a written form or anything like that before, she goes out of her way to learn them, memorize them, and invent a script, not just for one of them, but for two of them, Algonquin and Iroquois. You also had the great Jesuit missionaries that came throughout New France, which is what they called it at this period, Saint Jean de Brébeuf, Saint Isaac Jogues, all of them did all of this. They went among the Huron peoples. Eventually, most of them were martyred for it, but they had this sense that they had to go out in mission. And if you go even across Western Canada, out into those weird English people, you see that even among the Protestant communities, as among the Catholics, there was this notion that this common faith identity held the community together. Because it was the old tribalisms, even yes in Europe, that caused people to fight based on family lines or who they thought was more important. But the one great thing that this country did, and if you've ever had to live in the prairies, you know you depend on your neighbors. Even if you don't like them. You see him at church, you see him at hockey, you see him for that brief spat when you have to play baseball, but you're stuck with these people. And you have to learn to develop a relationship with them. You have to learn to develop a bond with them. And you realize that you're in it with them. And so all of those boundaries are, in the end, less important than we would have thought. So many of the things that Canadians have been doing for over 100 years are now becoming vogue around the world. Ecumenism, multiculturalism, etc., etc. We did it, but not because we had an ideology for it. We did it out of necessity. Catholics, Romans, and Ukrainians learning to get along because, well, they had to go to church somewhere, and if there was only a Ukrainian church or if there was only a Roman church in town, then they learned to get along. Protestants and Catholics learning to get along with each other because they had a common purpose in terms of taking care of the poor or in taking care of the sick. And these common purposes bound us together. But before you start thinking that I'm starting to believe in some kind of Canadian exceptionalism, there are two things. Well, I'll just summarize it just being one thing. There's one thing that is truly preventing our country from growing according to this pattern. Obviously, one, it's the loss of the faith. But here's the problem. We can't get the faith back the way it was. There were experiences and difficulties that the world faced that challenged the faith of our forebears. And we need to actually embrace what those challenges meant. What it means to have ecclesiastical or political corruption. What it means to have that we need to know that we are bound together, not just by our neighbors, but by a common bond of the truth. The second thing is technology. Canada was built by necessity. Not the government, not the society, but the bonds. when it was really cold in the winter, you were stuck with your neighbors. But now in Canada, we've invented this lovely thing called the automobile. And we've developed the incredible capacity that if we don't like our neighbors, we don't learn how to reconcile, we just move to a new town. We don't learn to depend on each other in good times or in bad, or in good weather or in bad weather, and the bad weather is definitely on the higher proportion in the Canadian lifestyle. Because when you have those difficulties, you learn to bond with each other. My favorite example is when I was on the bus. It was my father's birthday. I was on the bus, and it was raining. Not raining, it was snowing in Victoria. And it was a lot of snow. And I was on the bus because I couldn't drive in the snow because my tires were Victoria tires, and it was a small Toyota Tercel, and I knew I would just kind of go like this if I were to start driving. And a whole bunch of other people got that bright idea. So we all got on the bus together. And then gradually, as the cell phone batteries died out, people started talking to each other. And then eventually, when I decided that I should call my father, because I hate cell phones, I wasn't really using it, so my cell phone was still actually active. And I called my dad long distance, and I said, "Happy birthday, Dad." And then eventually, we had this little conversation. And then Dad says to me, "Well, I guess I got to let you go because you must be at some kind of party." And I said, "No, Dad, I'm on the bus. I'm on the bus. People are just talking to each other." We can recapture the beauty of our country, but we must also resist the temptations for an easy life. And I've noticed that the 1930s and the wars have had a huge impact at the insularization of our culture. We've experienced poverty, we've experienced war, and we've experienced death. And that poverty, that war, that death has resulted in us playing it safe. We no longer risk not just money, but most importantly, our hearts. Vocations dried up. Public service is beginning to waste away. Public initiatives are no longer vogue, and people are spending more money fixing their living rooms than they are fixing their communities. This is a tragedy of a national order. And so all of these national and big public debates that are going on about what's happening with the future of our country, they are symptoms. Physician-assisted suicide and death. That's because we've stopped caring for each other long term. People are aging and dying alone. That's the tragedy. We no longer give ourselves and our time for the common good. We only go into a career if it pays well, not because it benefits society as a whole. If you want to wonder why Canada is struggling, it's because all of those bonds that made us an amazing and strong people are gradually dwindling. But I am not giving a Make Canada Great Again speech. Just to let you know. Because those old bonds of diversity were how to bond Europeans together. And we needed to undergo the same breakup that the European hegemony experienced in our own culture. Because as you might have noticed, Canada is no longer a multicultural European society. It's a multicultural society that has brought people from all over the world and not just from Christendom. But if there's one thing that I've noticed, our church and our country have the same patron, Saint Joseph. Saint Joseph is the protector of the humanity of God. The weird balance of divinity and humanity is what makes being a Christian the most beautiful, complex, paradoxical, and real faith there is on this earth. For God welcomes everything into his home. And so must we. But we must also abandon that utopianism that somehow thinks that we can in fact build the city of God on this earth. We must leave the door slightly open for God to come in. Because if we are not willing to welcome the complexity of God's call in our day-to-day life, then we are by nature going to exclude the foreigner, the strange, and the peculiar. God is a strange guy. He desires mercy, not sacrifice, tenderness, not perfection, mercy and care, not some kind of perfect utopia. And the more we seek after the will of this Father, the more we seek the mercy of the one who is willing to welcome back into the fold the ones who are supposedly destroying our society, like Jesus welcomed Matthew, then we will realize that we weren't building a great people. We had built one by accident.